Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Education Report and the Making of a Nation, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with As It Is, a program that helps you learn and improve your American English. Today, our program is about one subject, and it affects nearly everyone at some time in their lives. Listen carefully, print the words we say with your computer, and download the audio. Then, practice reading and speaking English whenever you can. Let's get started. Every year, more than 800,000 people die by killing themselves, according to the World Health Organization. The WHO is launching its first global report on suicide prevention. It says more people die from suicide than from conflicts, wars, and natural disasters combined. This launch happened in combination with the International Association for Suicide Prevention's World Suicide Prevention Day this week. Anna Mateo and Christopher Cruz tell us more.
Every 40 seconds, a person somewhere in the world commits suicide. This shockingly high number, or statistic, comes from the World Health Organization. Although this statistic is large, the WHO says only a few countries have policies aimed at suicide prevention. The International Association for Suicide Prevention, or IASP, says in 2012, suicide was the fifth leading cause of death of people between the ages of 30 to 49. The association observes World Suicide Prevention Day on September 10th. The IASP hopes to raise awareness on the problem of suicide. World Suicide Prevention Day in 2014 is notable because it marks the release of the World Suicide Report by the WHO.
The World Health Organization calls suicide a major global health problem. It says a common idea is that suicides mostly happen in Western and developed countries. In reality, it says about 75% of suicides happen in low and middle-income countries. The UN Health Agency finds suicide rates around the world are highest in people over the age of 70. However, the WHO Director of Mental Health and Substance Abuse says young people are also greatly at risk. Dr. Shekha Saxena notes suicide is the second leading cause of death among those between 15 and 29. And he adds that more men kill themselves than women.
Overall in the world, more men commit suicide than women. Although in richer countries, in the more developed countries, the proportion is many more men compared to women. And in developing countries, the proportion is less skewed. That means, of course, it's still more men, but definitely not as much as in developed countries.
The WHO says the highest rates of suicide are found in Central and Eastern Europe and in some Asian countries. It says suicide rates in Africa appear to be lower, but the group warns that there is limited information from the area and it may not be reliable. The International Association for Suicide Prevention says studies have shown that being alone or in social isolation can increase the risk of suicide. They say that having strong human connections can protect against suicide. The IASP says simply reaching out to people who have become disconnected from others may be a life-saving act.
Dr. Saxena says there is much more that communities can do to provide support. He says suicide is the final decision for people who are feeling alone, depressed, and hopeless. Often, these people reach out for help. Dr. Saxena explains how people can do more to provide support for people who find themselves at the lowest point in life.
People who eventually commit suicide have, almost in all cases, sought help from someone. It can be a friend, it can be a family member, it can be a healthcare system, it can be a social care system, it could be a religious organization. And very often, this request or plea for help was not responded to positively.
The report says the most common ways of committing suicide globally are poisoning from chemicals intended to kill pests called pesticides, hanging, and firearms. Information from a number of European countries, the United States, and other developed nations shows limiting access to these means can help prevent suicide.
Health officials agree that celebrity suicides can cause others to do the same. This is called copycat behavior. For example, media around the world covered in great detail the suicide of actor and comedian Robin Williams in August of this year. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences sent an image on Twitter showing Disney's Aladdin hugging the genie, voiced in the film by Mr. Williams, with the words, "Genie, you are free." Many mental health experts and suicide prevention organizations criticized this message. They claim it does not show the reality of suicide and could lead to copycat suicides.
Alexandra Fleischman is a scientist in the WHO's Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. She tells VOA there is a link between the way in which suicides are reported in the media and acts that are committed thereafter.
So this underlines and emphasizes the role the media play in reporting suicide cases. Suicide should not be glamorized or sensationalized in the media because of the imitation that can follow.
The World Health Organization is also calling for nations to end the criminalization of suicide. It says there currently are 25 countries in the world, in Africa, South America, and Asia, where both suicide and attempted suicide are considered crimes. It says even people who accidentally poison themselves may end up in prison instead of in a health center or hospital that could help them heal.
For more information on World Suicide Prevention Day, please visit www.iasp.info/WSPD/. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for being with us today. That's all for As It Is. Please join us again tomorrow. This is VOA.
The Education Report is next, followed by The Making of a Nation. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Students from China have a long history of coming to the United States for education. And this month, American educators expect high schools across the U.S. to enroll more Chinese students than ever. 17-year-old Grace Liu is one of about 30,000 Chinese citizens at American high schools. She grew up in Tianjin, a city of 14 million people on China's east coast. This fall, she is starting her third year of high school in the southeastern United States. Grace attends Raven Gap Nakuchi School in Raven Gap, a small community in the state of Georgia. She sounds very happy with her surroundings.
The people here is really nice, and we say hi to each other, and even though we don't know each other. People here help me a lot, and the environment here is really good.
Anthony Scro heads the Raven Gap School. He says Chinese applications or requests to attend the school have risen sharply.
The first couple students came in the 1980s, late 80s, and they have come significantly greater numbers in the last 15 years.
Many of the students are from China's growing middle class. They want a good education and an advantage, a better chance to compete for places in America's most respected universities. Attending schools outside China also means an escape from the intense competition at schools inside China. Memorization by rote is common there. This method of learning through memory exercises uses up a lot of time. It can keep students from taking part in sports or interest groups. In addition, Chinese students in the U.S. do not face the Chinese examination, Gaokao. It is designed to measure a student's ability to do college work. Many students in their home country worry about this difficult test. Anthony Scro says some of Raven's citizens have expressed displeasure about the young Chinese arrivals.
That was the argument when the Chinese started coming in large numbers. Why are we educating our enemies? And my response to people around this is the world in which we grew up in is very different than the world these students are growing up in today.
Mr. Sgro says his students see stories about China when they open a newspaper or watch television news. He says they also will know five students from that country. 17-year-old Yvette Yang says she and her Chinese classmates are part of a new future. The number of international students attending university in the United States is also reaching record numbers. 800,000 foreign students were studying at American colleges in 2012. And that's the VOA Learning English Education Report. I'm Jerry Watson. Thank you.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By February 1, 1861, 7 southern states had withdrawn from the United States of America. They created their own independent nation, the Confederate States of America. The South seceded because Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, had been elected president. Southerners believed he would support a constitutional ban on slavery. They were afraid their way of life would soon end. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe discuss the beginning of Abraham Lincoln's presidency.
President-elect Lincoln traveled by train from his home in Illinois to Washington, D.C. Along the way, he stopped to make speeches. As he got closer to Washington, he was warned that a mob was planning to attack the train. He had to continue his trip in secret. Lincoln arrived in Washington 9 days before his inauguration. It was a busy time. He talked with many people, including delegates to a peace convention. Every state was represented at the convention, except the states that had seceded. The delegates urged Lincoln to support slavery. They urged him not to go to war over the issue. Lincoln said only that he would faithfully execute the duties of president of all the United States. He said he would protect and defend the American Constitution.
While Lincoln waited for Inauguration Day, he chose the members of his cabinet. He wanted men representing all opposing groups in the Republican Party. He hoped this would unite the party and give him support in the difficult years ahead. Lincoln chose William Seward as Secretary of State, Salmon Chase as Treasury Secretary, Gideon Welles as Navy Secretary, and Montgomery Blair as Postmaster General. Seward did not like Chase, Welles, or Blair. He told Lincoln that he could not serve in the cabinet with them. He said they would never be able to work together. Lincoln answered that he would be happy to make Seward ambassador to Britain instead of Secretary of State. Seward gave up the argument and agreed to join the cabinet.
Inauguration Day was the 4th of March. President-elect Lincoln rode to the ceremony with outgoing President James Buchanan. Buchanan was ready to give up his power. He told Lincoln, "If you are as happy to get into the White House as I am to get out of it, you must be the happiest man alive." The inaugural ceremony took place outside the Capitol building. Lincoln was to give his inaugural speech before being sworn in. He had worked hard on the speech. He wanted to say clearly what his policy would be on slavery and secession. These were the issues which divided the country. These were the issues which were leading the country to civil war. This is what Lincoln said.
"There seems to be some fear among the people of the southern states that because a Republican administration is coming to power, their property and their peace and personal security are threatened. There has never been any reasonable cause for such fears. In fact, much evidence to the contrary has existed, open to their inspection. It is found in nearly all my published speeches. In one of those speeches, I declared that I had no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I said I believed I had no legal right to do so, and no wish to do so. This statement is still true. I can only say that the property, peace, and security of no part of the country are to be in any way endangered by the incoming administration.
Lincoln noted that 72 years had passed since the first president was inaugurated. Since then, he said, 15 men had led the nation through many dangers, generally with great success. He went on,
I now begin the same job under great difficulty. The breaking up of the Federal Union, before only threatened, now is attempted. I believe that under universal law and the Constitution, the union of these states is permanent. This is shown by the history of the Union itself. The Union is much older than the Constitution. It was formed, in fact, by the Articles of Association in 1774. It was continued by the Declaration of Independence in 1776. It grew further under the Articles of Confederation in 1778. And finally, in 1787, one of the declared reasons for establishing the Constitution of the United States was to form a more perfect union. I therefore believe that, in view of the Constitution and the laws, the Union is not broken. I shall make sure, as the Constitution orders me to do, that the laws of the Union are obeyed in all the states. In doing this, there needs to be no bloodshed or violence, and there shall be none unless it be forced upon the national government. The power given to me will be used to hold, occupy, and possess the property and places belonging to the government, and to collect the taxes. But beyond what is necessary for these purposes, there will be no invasion, no using of force against or among the people anywhere.
Lincoln then repeated some statements he had made during his campaign for president. He used them to explain the differences between North and South. One part of the country, he said, believes slavery is right and should be extended. The other part believes slavery is wrong and should not be extended. This, he said, was the only important dispute. Lincoln admitted that even if the dispute could be settled peacefully, there were those who wanted to see the Union destroyed. He said his words were not meant for them. They were meant only for those people who really loved the Union. He said,
physically speaking, we cannot separate. We cannot remove our sections from each other, nor build an impassable wall between them. A husband and wife may be divorced and go away from or out of the reach of each other. But the different parts of our country cannot do this. They must remain face to face. And relations, friendly or hostile, must continue between them. Is it possible to make those relations better after separation than before? Can aliens make treaties easier than friends can make laws? Can treaties be more faithfully enforced between aliens than laws can be enforced among friends? My countrymen, one and all, think calmly and well upon this subject. Nothing valuable can be lost by taking time. In your hands, my dissatisfied fellow countrymen, and not in mine, is the great issue of civil war. The government will not attack you. You can have no conflict without being yourselves the aggressors. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though emotion may have damaged them, it must not break our ties of love.
Abraham Lincoln then placed his hand on the Christian holy book, the Bible. The Chief Justice of the United States then spoke the presidential oath. Lincoln repeated the words, and the United States had a new president. Lincoln's first crisis came quickly. It was a problem left unsolved by the outgoing president. Lincoln had to decide immediately what to do about the federal fort in the harbor of Charleston, South Carolina, Fort Sumter. The fort was surrounded by Southern artillery. Southern gunboats guarded the harbor. The federal troops inside Fort Sumter were getting dangerously low on food, but any attempt to send more men or supplies would be seen as an act of war, civil war. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs are online, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us at twitter.com/voalearnenglish. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.